Thank you very much, Arnie. Our next speaker is Bruce Hershenson, who has been for more than two decades a very famous television and radio political commentator here in Southern California, familiar to many of us for his dulcet and mellifluous voice over the television, a sort of iron fist in a velvet glove. And like Ronald Reagan, Hershenson was always able cheerfully to argue for conservative principles without frightening the horses or offending the moderates. He began his career as a government employee. As a young man, he was the director of motion pictures and television for the United States Information Agency, in which capacity I think he is distinguished for, as far as I know, having been the only person ever to win an Oscar for the federal government for the best documentary one year produced by the USIA under his direction. And in 1969, he was selected as one of the 10 outstanding young men in the federal government. Whatever happened to that plaque? I haven't seen it around the office. He continued he went on to win the second highest civilian award, the Distinguished Service Medal of the United States government, and then became Deputy Special Assistant to Richard Nixon. More importantly, and in more recent years, of course, Bruce Hershenson was the 1992 Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in California and was, alas, defeated by Barbara Boxer. But then Abe Lincoln lost his only Senate race, too, against Stephen Douglas, although, of course, Barbara Boxer was no Stephen Douglas. Well aware of that. Since then, he has carried on teaching at the John F. Kennedy Institute of Politics at Harvard University, a seminar entitled U.S. Foreign Policy, which they could certainly learn more about at Harvard. He has taught at Pepperdine, and he now is a non-resident associate fellow of the Nixon Center for Peace and Freedom. But among us at the Claremont Institute, we prefer to call him a distinguished fellow. Bruce Hershenson.
Thank you. Thanks, Charles, for that introduction. And that was a terrific history of California politics. Particularly because I came out okay at the end of it. I just want to mention one thing that wasn't said. It was the day after Governor Brown, Jerry Brown, lost the election against Pete Wilson. He was at Channel 7, KABC, and the anchor, Jerry Dunphy, if some of you are familiar with California TV, said to Governor Brown, "Why is it that you think you lost that election for the Senate?" And there's an amazing honesty that comes after a loss of an election. And Governor Brown said, "I think the people got sick of me and I got sick of the people." I believe that discussing the future of conservatism in California can't be discussed independent of the future of conservatism in the United States and in national and international affairs. And sometimes you don't even know that something is sort of slipping away until it has slipped away. And I believe that the terms conservative and liberal regarding some issues, particularly national and international, are coming to the point, very close to the point of no return. If this was October the 16th of 1960 or 1970, 1980, even 1990, and someone said that I was a conservative or someone else is a liberal, you would know immediately, by the use of one of those two words, how we felt about practically every issue, including international affairs. You wouldn't have to ask, how do you feel about the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, or how do you feel about Vietnam, or Afghanistan, or Grenada, or whatever it may be, because you would know, it would be identifiable just by the use of one of those two words, conservative or liberal, and that would define the person. Now, the person, I'm afraid, is defining the philosophy. Let me just ask some questions regarding 1999. Do conservatives believe in free trade with free nations? As a conservative, I always did, and I still do. Do conservatives believe in government subsidies for failing businesses? As a conservative, I never did, and I still don't. Do conservatives believe in legal immigration, in the plaque, the Emma Lazarus plaque on the Statue of Liberty? Do we believe in that? As a conservative, I always did, and I still do. Do conservatives believe in the War Powers Resolution that gives the Congress veto power over the president? As a conservative, I never did, and I still don't. Do conservatives believe in military intervention against totalitarians? As a conservative, I always did, and I still do. Do conservatives believe in George McGovern's campaign slogan in 1972, "Come Home, America"? I never did, and I still don't. I feel that saying you're a conservative right now doesn't mean anywhere near as much as it meant as a real political philosophy designation in 1960, 70, 80, and 90. And I don't mean to let the liberals off the hook. Liberals have also changed many of their philosophies, and we should have embraced them when they did. We should have welcomed their changes rather than pushed them away and take the other side. Bill Clinton shares former President George Bush's belief in an expanding NATO. Senator Wellstone shares the belief of Senator Helms that we're letting China, People's Republic of China, get away with murder in its civil rights violations. Senator Kennedy agreed with Margaret Thatcher in our intervention in Kosovo. Why didn't we embrace these people and say, good, God, after all these years, you finally come around? Instead, we seem to have taken the other side. And I think, too, that there is a rise in personality. I remember when Khrushchev used to call the Stalinist period the personality cult. To some degree, we have it, and we have to be careful. It explains the Reform Party. It's why the Reform Party can seriously look at Warren Beatty and Pat Buchanan and Jesse Ventura and Donald Trump, and they can seriously look at the Reform Party. I recognize the $13 million has something to do with it as well, but by and large, it has become personality rather than philosophy. And some of the greatest tyrannies in world history have come about from the personalization of politics, from people carrying a torch for a person and carrying it higher than their torch for their own political philosophy. There were hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Cambodians who went along with Pol Pot before the victory of Pol Pot in Cambodia. There were hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Ugandans who cheered for Idi Amin. Hundreds of thousands, millions, perhaps, of Iranians who cheered for the Ayatollah Khomeini and said, death to the Shah and death to America. And there were millions of Serbians who applauded and believed in Slobodan Milosevic. And just last week, we saw something terrible happen in Pakistan. And there's very, very few Pakistanis who are willing to speak publicly against the end of a very difficult democratic framework for Pakistan by General Musharraf. And it isn't that Prime Minister Sharif had a great administration. He didn't. But now the Constitution has been destroyed. There's a state of emergency. The lower house of parliament has been discarded. And it's just a terrible thing to watch when people sort of light their torch by a particular personality rather than a philosophy. I know that one thing has happened surely to conservatives nationally and internationally in terms of national and international policy. In our justified dislike and mistrust of Bill Clinton, I think that we've created something worse than his presidency. His presidency is temporary.
But our philosophy should be permanent. And by changing any philosophy that we may have, whether it be the war powers resolution or intervention or whatever it may be, trade, immigration, whatever it may be, when we do that, we totally lose credibility, or will lose credibility, when he's out of office in what I hope is the permanence of the United States. People can easily say, yeah, but when he was president, well, you were for the war powers resolution. I know you guys were always against it, but that's when you had Republicans in the White House. Well, you can't do that, because what we believe in should be a philosophy that remains permanent, rather than this personality who is temporary. He's going to be out of office. If we have emphasis on individuals, for them or against them, rather than philosophy, then we're going to lose, and we should lose. We deserve to lose. If we stick to the philosophy that's made this the greatest nation in world history, that brought about the defeat of Nazism and Soviet communism, that brought about the highest standard of living in the world, highest economy, then we'll win because we deserve to win. I mean, I recognize there's going to be some losses and disappointments, but in the end, we're going to win. Despite my deep concern about this, and it sure is a deep concern, because I find the definition of conservatism has to be explained, or you have to define what kind of a conservative you are and what kind of a conservative you aren't. Despite my deep concern about this, I just want to say that there is a tremendously bright light on the horizon, and I'm positive of it. And that bright light is the next generation. I've had recent experiences at a very liberal university in the East Coast and a conservative university here in the West Coast. And this coming generation is terrific. I can't explain why. I can't say, well, it's because this happened or this happened. I would, by all of this past 20 years history or so, I'd say, boy, this is going to be a terrible generation, but it isn't. It is a magnificent generation. And I have tremendous faith in them. Tom Brokaw wrote this book, The Greatest Generation, accurate on World War II, the World War II generation, the generation of my folks. I came too late for it, and I'm too early for the next greatest generation, because I think that this new generation is going to be the greatest generation. And I an amazing sense of values, ethics, respect. And I believe that what we should do for those of us who have lived certainly the majority of our lives in the 20th century should make sure that those who live the majority of their lives in the 21st century, that we give them an inheritance of a philosophy that they can hold on to.